imagínate, no hay deseo, no hay deseo. Chaksu Sumilatani Zainaktas Maya Sri Guru Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manavishkam Stapitam Dina Vitale Sani Ipa Kadamayam Radhati Sahandantikam. Vansa Kalpati Vissa Kripati Vivisa Patitanam Pavanevi Omasnavim Namah. After the topmost of activities involving Krishna were performed in Vrindavan, and those most intimate activities were the rasa dance, where Krishna danced with the Braja Gopikas after calling them with the sound of his flute. And when after Krishna called them, then he teased them in such a way to bring out their love for him, their pranaya, their love for him. And then he told them to go home. He told them, you've seen the forest now, and now you can go home. Because this is not a safe place for young ladies. There are tigers around, etc. Now, why have you come here, he can say. So after that, the gopis spoke to him in what is called the Pranaya Gita. And then Krishna began to play with them, his pastimes with them. And then immediately, because they thought themselves so bhagyavan, the most fortunate, because Krishna has his own plan, and he's the enjoyer, and he is the Leela Purushottam, he acts the way he likes. He disappeared from the gopis, leaving the gopis, practically speaking, to go mad. And they fully exhibited their love for him in their madness. And they were chanting his names, which shows us that the chanting of Krishna's names is actually, it goes to the perfection of one's Krishna consciousness. It's continuous. It's not something that only one does in sadhana. It is the best type of bhajan. It is the best type of worship, service, but also it's the it is the perfection. So then the gopis were madly looking for Krishna in their madness, they sang a beautiful song called the Gopi Gita, and they expressed their love for Krishna. So everything that was in their heart came out their mouth. Then Krishna returned, and the gopis were somewhat angry with him, and they teased him, and they asked him some questions, and Krishna, with his answers, proved that it was for their glorification, not his selfishness, that he acted the way he did. Then next, they had the rasa dance. Then the next chapter, interestingly enough, chapter 34 in the 10th canto describes two great demons. Two exhibitions of demonic mentality, even though the first wasn't a demon at all, and his name was Vidyadhara. And he was swallowed Nanda Maharaj in the form of a snake on the Shivaratri in Ambika Kaga, in Ambikavan, and Krishna, to save Nanda Maharaj, touched him with his lotus feet, and the snake shed his body and became a wonderful Upadevata named Vidyadhara. He became a demigod. He assumed his actual form. So, interestingly, that he had gotten in that position of a snake due to his pride. He was a very beautiful person, and when one is proud, one can get oneself in so much trouble. So he laughed at someone who wasn't as fortunate as him in the physical sense, Astavakra Muni, who was very spiritually powerful though, and Astavakra Muni cursed him, and therefore he became a snake. So he actually changed his body even in his one life. But the next one who also was proud and envious was named Sankachuda. While Krishna was dancing and Balaram were dancing with their individual gopis on the holy night, this Sankachuda came and he thought, why should these gopis, beautiful young ladies, be dancing with this Krishna and Balaram? They should be dancing with me. This is the way that the ahankar, which is full of pride and envy, thinks. I should be the center. I should be the enjoyer. And this always causes us so much illusion and causes us so much difficulty, this conception of ourself as the enjoyer, because it is not actually possible for us to enjoy. All we could do is enjoy in our mind, which is basically a product of the false ego. With our minds we can enjoy, and all our pleasure goes on in our mind. There is no actual pleasure. But this demon, because it was a demonic mentality trying to take the gopis away from Krishna, he ended up being killed by Krishna. And he had a jewel, that which was valuable to him, was taken away by Krishna and used in Krishna's service. This is the proper use of everything that is valuable, actually. This is Krishna consciousness, to use whatever we have, whatever according to our fate. According to our fate, everyone has a particular situation, and certain opulences, abilities are in that situation, and of course certain drawbacks and debilities are in that situation. And whatever situation we're in, it should be used for Krishna's pleasure. And ultimately everything is used for Krishna's pleasure, and that is the perfection of everything that we have. If we can somehow use it for the pleasure of Krishna. So after the Sankachuda was killed, there is another chapter where the gopis were feeling separation from Krishna, because it was just after the rasa dance. In the sequence of the chapters, and they were missing Krishna 2 months, and it's interesting how between the Rasalila chapter and this chapter of separation from Krishna called the Jugala Gita, or the, because there are pairs of verses, so this chapter 35 in the Krishna book, it is called the Gopi's Feelings of Separation. So this is a perfection. In the material world, we are separate from Krishna, but feel no separation. We don't feel, we have desires for happiness, but we don't feel separation from Krishna. We don't miss him. We turn our back on Krishna, bhule se jeevan adya bahya mukh, and then we forget Krishna. We are just become enwrapped in our own mental plans, our own plans how we're going to be happy. But it doesn't have anything to do with Krishna. What book is that? Yeah. Is that volume 2?
Yeah.
Can't see volume 2. 3, but we need 2. The 2 is not here. No, that one. This one. No, that one's part 3?
This is part 3.
Oh, okay. No. Do you know where the second one is? Okay, no, not required now, but it will be. Okay. So, here's how Prabhupada explains this, because the gopis, the Braja gopis, they missed Krishna too much. Because this is the nature of love. So the gopis of Vrindavan were so attached to Krishna that they were not satisfied simply with the rasa dance at night. This is the nature of love. They wanted to associate with him and enjoy his company during the daytime also. When Krishna went to the forest with his cowherd boyfriends and cows, the gopis did not physically take part, but their hearts went with him. And because their hearts went, they were able to enjoy his company through strong feelings of separation. To acquire the strong feeling of separation is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and his direct disciplic succession of Goswamis. When we are not physically in physical contact with Krishna, we can associate with him like the gopis through feelings of separation. Krishna's transcendental form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage are all identical with him. There are 9 different kinds of devotional service, and devotional service to Krishna in feelings of separation elevates the devotee to the highest perfectional level, to the level of the gopis. And what do you remember from that paragraph? Anyone remember something? Yes. Perfectional level. So again, in this world, we are indeed separate from Krishna. Not really separate from Krishna, because we have an eternal connection with him. He is the Param Satyam, the Absolute Truth. Mama Eva Angsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So we have our eternal relationship with Krishna. It can never be broken. But despite having this relationship with Krishna in the material world, the souls turn their back on him. Krishna Buddha Sejiva Nadia Bayamu Atta Eva, therefore Maya Tare Samsareva. That we are awarded the situation in the material world where we can try to enjoy ourselves separate from Krishna, but really what we get is samsarera duk, the unhappiness, the miseries of material existence and birth and death. This is the result. So the cure for this is to turn towards Krishna, from Bahyamukh to Samukh, from having our back facing Krishna to facing him consciously and directly. So when we hear about Krishna, and this is the essence of the process, or the foundational part of the process, to hear about Krishna, some desire should come to our heart, to our consciousness, either because of the shastric injunctions or because we actually have a desire ourselves. We should have a desire to again awaken our relationship with Krishna. And then when we want to have our relationship with Krishna awaken, but yet we are separate from him, and wanting to be with Krishna, but being in fact separate from him, awakens the feelings of separation. So there has to be a desire, and then there has to be the absence of the fulfillment of the desire. Just like when it's very cold in the morning, we have the desire to be warm, and we are just waiting for the warmth to come in the form of the sun. So that desire to become warm is due to the lack of warmth. And that desire to become warm causes us to act in such a way that we will get warm. So similarly, if we actually, it doesn't make a difference in one sense how close we are But if we just would want to be with Krishna for service, then Krishna will reciprocate with that. So that desire to feel that I'm not with Krishna but want to be with Krishna, it's called varaha bhava, separation. So it's so powerful that to perform one's devotional service to Krishna in feelings of separation, it elevates the devotee to the highest perfectional level. So it's very, very powerful. And this is the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because when we're, if we associate with Krishna through feelings of separation, then we'll always be thinking about him. And this doesn't mean we should always be thinking, oh, I'm so fallen, I can't be with Krishna, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, I have this problem and that problem. No, we shouldn't be thinking like that. We should be thinking of Krishna. So this continues, this chapter continues. It is stated in Srinivasacharya's prayer to the six Goswamis that they left the material opulence of government service and the princely status of life and went to Vrindavan, where they lived just like ordinary mendicants, like beggars, begging from door to door. But they were so much enriched with the gopis' feelings of separation that they enjoyed transcendental pleasure at every moment. So in that, even though they didn't possess anything on the material level, they possessed the greatest wealth on the spiritual level. And that great wealth was their relationship with Krishna, and they were enriched. That's such a good word, enriched. It's used in relationship to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were enriched, even though they were beggars, they were enriched with what? What was their riches? What was their wealth? It was this unlimited or desire that was so powerful to be with Krishna while feeling they weren't with Krishna. So they were looking for Krishna everywhere. They were always in that mood of looking for Krishna everywhere. Where is Krishna? They were so much enriched with the gopis' feelings of separation that they enjoyed transcendental pleasure at every moment. So the result of wanting to be with Krishna was that they were in fact with Krishna, and therefore they experienced ecstasy in the association of Krishna. Similarly, when Lord Chaitanya was in Jagannath Puri, he was in the role of Srimati Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna. Those who are in the disciplic succession of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya should always feel separation from Krishna, worship his transcendental form, and discuss his transcendental teachings, his pastimes, his qualities, and his antaraj. So these are the basic sarupa-siddha activities of a devotee. These actions are powerful. Wanting to be with Krishna, and then what does one do when one doesn't feel he's with Krishna, but wants to be with Krishna? He should always feel separation from Krishna. Worship his transcendental form, that means the deity, and discuss his transcendental teachings. In other words, have one's consciousness be engaged in Krishna Katha, speaking Shravanam Kirtanam. His teachings, his pastimes, his qualities, and his entourage, his activities. So that means, first Prabhupada mentions, worship his transcendental form, so it's rupa and teachings, the shiksha, his pastimes, his lila, his qualities, guna, and his antaraj, which is his lila. So, in other words, the consciousness, if we are serious about this, our consciousness can be always absorbed in thinking about him, and the lack of seriousness when one actually thinks that this is, that this type of instruction is actually for me. When Prabhupada said that those who are in the disciplic succession of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya should always feel separation from Krishna, worship his transcendental form, and discuss his transcendental teachings, his pastimes, his qualities, his entourage. That this is what his disciples are meant to be doing, his followers. This is what the devotees are meant to be doing, to be fully engaged in wanting to be with Krishna, and not just sitting around and wanting. Because if we don't have activities in that wanting, we will stop wanting and just go to sleep. But want and serve and chant and speak about Krishna in different aspects. So this is a very high platform of what? Of sincerity. This is a very high platform of seriousness and sincerity. This will enrich the devotees. So the Goswamis were so much enriched by these feelings of separation. And then Prabhupada says, this will enrich the devotees to the highest devotional perfection. It will elevate them, make them wealthy, very wealthy, fully wealthy. With what? The highest devotional perfection. What is the highest devotional perfection? The love? Huh?
Prema.
But not only prema, but Krishna prema, but not only Krishna prema in the mood of the Brijbasis, but not only in the mood of the Brijbasis, but in the mood of the Brajagopikas too, if that is what one desires. So feeling constant separation, so not right now I'm feeling separation, but then later on I'll take a break from that and I'll do something else for a while, and then maybe tomorrow or the next day I'll come back to feeling separation. No, that's not the real item. Feeling constant separation while engaged in the service of the Lord, so that's the activity, is to be engaged in the service of the Lord. This is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, right in the beginning, because he wrote this Krishna book in past 1970. So he was telling his very young and immature disciples who didn't know anything about Krishna, about the perfection and how to gain the perfection in Krishna consciousness. So how to gain this desire? This is our process. Excuse me. All the processes that we perform in Krishna consciousness are meant to bring us to the platform where we can act with this type of seriousness and sincerity. Because we spend our lives. At least it's a good ring. Whose kirtan is it? Feeling constant separation while engaged in the service of the Lord is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. So one would think that the perfection of Krishna consciousness is being with Krishna, because that's what you would think, that's the goal. But actually Prabhupada said here the perfection is to be engaged in separation, and that will because in that separation of feeling separate from Krishna, one will actually have the experience of Krishna. Any questions about this? This is the beginning of this chapter. And the gopis, they were with Krishna. They were dancing with him at times, but still, that didn't satiate them. That didn't fill them with enough Krishna, and then they wanted to do something else. They wanted more and more and more. Any questions or comments about this?
There seems to be injunctions in the Shastra that talk about patience, and Srila Prabhupada himself sometimes we talk about patience. And then there seems to be this sense of separation, which sometimes seems to feel like impatience, because one becomes intolerant of the amount of distance there is. The amount of disability one perceives in oneself in terms of always remembering Krishna. How do you reconcile those two principles?
What do you mean by reconcile?
Well, the patience and the separation don't seem to be compatible with each other.
What does one do if one feels separation?
One thinks more about what one's separate from.
And as in here in this comment it said, although the gopis enjoy direct association with Krishna at night in the rasa dance, during the day Krishna went about his normal duties, tending the cows in the forest. At that time, the minds of the gopis would run after him, but the young girls had to stay back in the village and do their own duties. Thus, feeling the pain of separation, they would sing about Sri Krishna's transcendental pastimes. So, there is no injunction that one should be so patient that one shouldn't be absorbed in chanting or hearing about Krishna. Prabhupada never says that, and nor did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should be patient, enthusiastic, proceed with conviction, etc. Of course this is an advanced stage, so when one hears this, how does one feel? That was my first question there. When one hears that one should be constantly experiencing these things and feeling separation, and then on the other hand we see that our own consciousness is so dull and separate from Krishna, so what does that, what consciousness does that breed? It should breed a type of humility and understand that I have so far to go. And let me, and if I want to gain what I'm supposed to gain, then I have to be a little more focused, or a lot more focused, depending upon our capacity. But we shouldn't get complacent, is one of the points that could be drawn from this. We shouldn't think, well, I'm a devotee and I'm doing some service and I have, and who knows what, but there's such a tendency to be complacent, and that complacency, what does complacency mean?
Sort of satisfied with who you are and not really trying to do anything.
Yeah, so, and that's not very healthy, because that type of complacency will degrade us into wanting things on the material level, because we're not satisfied, really we're not satisfied on the Krishna conscious level, and because, so yeah, we should naturally tushy pushy chudapaya another son, we should be advancing, we should want to advance, yes, but there's such a tendency to get complacent on the spiritual level and tend to make, to be non-complacent on the material level. We'll end up just making our material plans for comfort. Well, those are fruitless, because we cannot never be comfortable in the material world. It just doesn't work. There's always one thing, and we're thinking that only if I remove this one obstacle, then I'll be comfortable and happy. but it, or buy this one thing, but it never happens. It never happens. So we'll end up on that track if we don't have some spiritual inspiration and desire to advance. So one question that sort of half came up yesterday too, is there anything that we can do to actually increase our desire, or are we sort of prisoners of our fate and our own advancement? Is there anything we could actually do to advance? And according to Shastra, we do have free will. According to the comments of Baladeva Vidyabhusana, according to the Vedanta Sutra, we do have free will. And when that free will is used to the best of our ability to step towards Krishna, Krishna who is Yayitamam Papadyante Tamsta Taiva Vajamyam, he reciprocates. So we can't close the gap ourselves, but if we don't use our free will to move closer to Krishna, then why will Krishna reciprocate in that way? Maybe he will anyway, that's up to him. But he's certainly inclined, when the devotee is sincere and serious, he's more inclined to reciprocate in such a way that increases his devotion. So what can we do? So if we decide I'm going to take my step to Krishna, what do we actually do? So we may not know everything step by step from tomorrow until we're perfect. We might not know every step. But Krishna never leaves us without a next step, something to do. We can chant Krishna's names either more or qualitatively more, or we can find some good association, or go to the dham, or just bring a breath of flower for the deity, or for our beloved deity, or hear some more shastra, or whatever. So we do our part. What do you think?
I think that sometimes, just looking at myself, I have the right amount of determination and enthusiasm to clearly see what is the next, even if it's only a gesture of a small step.
You say you do.
Yes. And sometimes I feel like I'm sort of really under the influence of the lower modes so strongly that I'm not even inclined in that direction, and it seems like there's lots of gaps.
So despite that, is there anything you can do? I'm not asking you to say what it is, but despite that fact,
at any moment you can move to the left of the room.
Well, for instance, tomorrow is Ekadasi, so maybe we have a little Bhakti Janani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the mother of devotion. So, or we can try to hear one mantra or something. We can always do something, or make our attempt to do something as a gesture that, yes, Krishna, I'm not satisfied. Because the nature of the material world is you can't remain satisfied. Even if what you're saying that, you're never satisfied, you can't be satisfied in the material world. It's just the very nature of it. So it's always rocking and rolling. And in illusion, we tend to think that the happiness is just nearby. But it, We spend our whole life like that, thinking that it's just nearby, and we never get there. So with good association, that of course helps, and the potency of the Holy Dham is there. So what do you think?
I think that in any situation where you become conscious of your separation and you're having your back to Krishna, without you can varying degrees of strength, you can try and turn around.
So that, and it's a very personal thing. I mean, individual. That we hear something, and just like Srila Prabhupada read the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in the Bhagavad Gita, and by Krishna's arrangement, it struck him deeply about satisfying the spiritual master, and he deeply remembered the order that his spiritual master gave him to preach in English. So, and still it took many, many years before he actually got on the boat, or what to speak of, got off the boat and started doing it. But he was trying, and he kept that determination. So just by reading one thing, one could get struck, and it can affect one's life. Because the words are that potent. So that's all we really need, in one sense. We just need to be in a receptive frame of mind and hear something like this chapter of the Bhagavatam, or any chapter of the Bhagavatam. And by the grace of Krishna, if we're in a receptive, sincere, receptive state of mind, we can get some instruction that can move us forward, help us move forward. So we make our little step, and then maybe that's all we can do. But then we should do it, if that's all we can do. We should take our step. But not only talk about it or hear about it, but then we should do something. So it's a good time for everyone to just think of something they can do, perhaps to within their capacity, or if you're within your capacity, to come a little bit closer to Krishna. Or just even hearing. Even if we don't do anything else but hear, and if we want to improve our hearing, we could not only be there and hearing, we could listen too, and try to, we could pray that, please give, I need some instruction, please let me hear something from the Bhagavatam that will touch me and give me the guidance that I need, or the impetus I need to move forward. So, and thus feeling the pain of separation, the gopis would sing about Sri Krishna's transcendental pastimes. They spent their days, the verse says, Ninyur Dukena Varsaran Krishna Lila Pragayantyo Ninyur Dukena Vasaran. So they would be always singing about Krishna. It was completely natural and spontaneous for them. So it may not, it won't be as natural and spontaneous for us, perhaps. But every little step forward we take is a step forward. And we don't know how Krishna is going to reciprocate with that step forward. He's the independent Supreme Lord. He can reciprocate as he likes. We should do our part. So did you think of something you can do?
I had a saying that don't say anything.
No, don't say anything. But
then I won't do it.
But if you do say it, you will do it. When you don't know,
I won't do it.
And if you don't say it, you will do it. Or then don't say it.
There's more chance that person you shouldn't say anything about a plan because there's always
danger. Yeah, you know where that is? That's David. Bali Maharaj passed there. No, it was in, not Bali Maharaj, but Kashyapa Muni. Talking about when Aditi, was it Aditi? On the Payavrata, I think. Yeah, and Jiva Goswami uses that, he quotes that to say that if you gain some advancement or some inspiration from Bhakti Sandarbha, do not tell anyone, even if they ask. And the same concept is there. And he quotes that. And the same concept is there in Prema Samput and also in Prem Bhakti Chandrika by Lord Tamadas Chakor. He says, don't go speaking about your bhajan here and there. Lord Tamadas Chakor says. So in any case, so here's the first of the twin verses. So these pastimes, see, they're remembering. They're feeling separation from Krishna from the depths of their heart. They're associating with Krishna while remembering his pastimes. So these are things that we've heard in other parts and previous parts of the Bhagavatam. So this first one is from one is from Venu Gita, actually. Gopika Krishna Nariksam Vanita Vitsa Rupasila. So the gopis say, and they're all, too bad I can't sing these. The gopis said, when Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm. So that means he puts his left cheek as he's playing this, and makes his eyebrows dance. So his eyebrows are moving as he's playing his flute. And they're thinking about this scene of seeing Krishna's form. And they know Krishna, and Krishna is alive in their consciousness, and as they're remembering him, he's in fact present, because he's pulled into their presence by their longing to be with him. He rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. So if you ever watch a person who's really involved in music, and they're playing the flute or something like that, you see that the music takes over their body, and it's like are they playing the music or is the music playing them? You can't tell, because their bodies are moving by the music, so it's some kind of an interaction. So while Krishna is playing, his eyebrows are dancing in a very charming way, enticing, stealing the minds of the Braja Gopikas. And at that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the Siddhas, they become amazed. So Krishna's playing his flute, his left arm is on his left cheek, it's moved to the side because he's Tribhanga, and his eyebrows are dancing. So the sound vibration is coming from the flute, and the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands in aeroplanes, their husbands, the siddhas, they become amazed. Why do they become amazed? Because the sound of Krishna's flute is so enchanting. And this is famous in Raja, that Krishna, the sound of Krishna's flute is completely enchanting. So much so that aspandanam gatimatam pulaka, aspandanam gatimatam, that means the things that are hard become soft, it's so enchanting. The stones melt. And the things that are soft become frozen in ecstasy. Like the soft river Yamuna, the water becomes frozen and stops its flowing. So this is the potency of Krishna's flute. So and the calves, when they stop drinking the milk from their mothers, their ears go up as there are cups to catch the liquid nectar coming from Krishna's flute. So it's fully powerful, Krishna's flute, the sound of Krishna's flute. It captures the heart of anyone who hears it. So even the demigoddesses who are with their husbands, who are in their aeroplanes traveling in the skies, they become amazed, they become shocked, and they start experiencing ecstasy. And because their bodies become ecstatic, and they become stunned in ecstasy, and their bodies become smaller. It shrinks, like sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu feels the ecstasy of separation. His body, sometimes it would all come in on itself, and it would become, his bodily limbs would withdraw inside of his body, and his body would look like a pumpkin. And sometimes the opposite effect would be there. His bodily limbs would become elongated, and there would be 6 inches of flesh, of skin between his joints. And when the devotees would see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like that, they would experience, they knew he was experiencing ecstasy, but they would feel tortured inside. Because to see the Lord in that much pain, even though it was separation, was very painful for them. So they would chant and chant loudly in his ear, and the pure sound vibration of their chanting would penetrate his consciousness, and then he would wake up and jump up, and his limbs would come out, and then he would jump up and loudly cry, "Anibal!" So the ladies, the demigoddesses, their bodily limbs would become, they would become ecstatic. As they would listen, they were embarrassed to find their minds yielding to the pursuit of lusty desires, and in their distress, which means their ecstasy, they are unaware that the belts of their garments are loosening. That means that their bodies in their ecstasy is contracting, and therefore their bodily clothes become disheveled and loosened because their bodies contract. Srila Jiva Goswami states that this chapter consists of a collection of statements the gopis made at various times as they stood in small groups here and there in Vrindavan. Because in small groups and big groups, depending upon the groups, the gopis would speak different degrees of intimate talks about Krishna. Now, there's a comment, long comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur about this, but it's too late to read it. Let's read the first paragraph. While herding his cows in the Vrindavan forest, Krishna played his flute to announce his arrival and to console the trees, creepers, birds, and beasts suffering in separation from him. The gopis, overwhelmed in waves of ecstasy from hearing that flute sound, spoke to their friends in 12 pairs of verses. So there's 24 verses and 12 pairs of them in this chapter. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments?
In this context, impatience could be considered as a boon or a blessing.
But impatience.
Yes. But you can't induce it artificially. It's an evolutionary status. So we don't have to do anything. Whether we should be patient, this question wouldn't arise when you are already on that level where impatience is a natural situation.
Yes. But still, I agree with that. One never ever in spiritual life should imitate. But yet, sometimes people who are not impatient, they're patient about their advancement.
That's the complacency you talked about.
Yes, yes, yes. So when we're like that, sometimes we become impatient about our complacency. So then the question is, can we do anything? And that's usually a real question for devotees. Is there anything I can do, or what can I do to advance, not imitate, as you're saying, which is they're the most exalted personalities, but is there anything I can do to move forward? And I think that's really a good point too, that for the question of whether if you have a deep greediness, then the question of what should I do doesn't come up, or should I be patient or impatient? That really doesn't come up because you're being, the music is playing you. You don't need to play the music in that sense. But for us who are not on that stage, the question does come up. Is there anything, in fact, I can do? And the answer is, yes. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
I remember when we were younger and Srila Prabhupada would come to visit, and being in his presence, he was so charged that it was very difficult to do anything other than how to advance in Krishna consciousness. I remember feeling when you go out of the room, there was this strange sort of feeling where you go down again, back to day-by-day life, come out of the room and you have to think about what you're going to get to eat, or where your family is now, or what you're going to go to work in the morning, or so many other things. So many your day-by-day things. And so a lot of the time I find that my attention has to focus on how am I going to get this thing done? How am I going to get that thing done? What about this? What about that? And sitting and hearing, or as it was then as Srila Prabhupada, your attention is only on how to of Krishna, but when you walk out the door, you've got to think of your family, you've got to think of things as well. So when you're thinking about those things, you sometimes feel like, well, what is the use of all this? You know, I should just, how can I find Krishna in this? It's so tedious, it seems to be going off direction to Krishna. Yet that's what you're facing a lot of the day. Days, nights go by like that.
Yeah. And we, of course, we have to be careful that days and nights go by like that until the day to our dying day. So there's the tendency, because we think, well, I still have another 30 years left, or another 40 years left, or 50 years left, or 100 years. We just think it's going to go on forever. And on one level, it does go on forever, but...
But if you're trying to think about Krishna, you're not trying to...
sometimes we have. Sometimes
that.
we can try to improve. If we can't, if we're in a situation where we can't improve the quantity, for example, we can try to improve the quality. Even. Mm-hmm. Or devotional service when we say that it's causeless, it means apatiyatan, ahaitiki apatiyatan. It also means that there's no material circumstance that can in fact stop it. So
I guess in the Paramasamhita last verse, it explains about how man exists by bodily activities, mental activities, social activities, and it defines everything material from breathing. These are all material activities. And then there's actually instruction to Lord Brahma where it says that you fill these activities with thoughts of then they lose the character of being material activities and they become auxiliary Gauna Bhakti activities. So I guess the emphasis still has to be on the primary devotional activities having strong enough.
Yes. That's an important point that in different terminology, but the hearing and chanting are the center of our spiritual life. And if we don't hear and chant sufficiently, then everything will turn into matter, material. even the things we're doing for Krishna will turn material, just like if the fire is burning brightly enough in our own consciousness, then the material things are spiritualized. That's in the Bhagavatam also, in the 11th canto.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
So you have to stoke the fire.
By hearing and chanting the association of devotees. That's the essence of the process. Isn't it? Well, that's what you just said. So the one way to look at it is that, you know, unfortunately you couldn't always stay with Prabhupada, and the other way to look at it is that fortunate that we ever had the opportunity to be in this association.
And similarly, you can think fortunately that we can come together and hear now, even if unfortunately we can't be together and hearing about Krishna throughout the day.
Or some service or another. Or to take the activities that we do and make them more directly connected to Krishna somehow. So then the question is, well, you know, we can get a momentary inspiration now that I'm going to do something, and then that's what you're saying, and then as soon as we walk out, we forget everything. We walk out the door and we forget everything. So let's try to remember it 10 seconds longer or something. We'll try to do something. Make a plan now. Think of something you can do tomorrow at Ekadasi. Okay. Shri Gopinath Nam Ki Jai.